Bate the Beaver is brought to you by Sundays for Dogs. Sundays is fresh dog food made from a short list of human-grade ingredients. And it was co-founded by Dr. Tori Waxman, a practicing vet who tests and formulates every version of each recipe. Sundays contains 90% meat, 10% superfoods, and 0% synthetic nutrients or artificial ingredients. Now, I have some friends who are dog parents, and they report that there are noticeable health improvements in their dogs, including softer fur, fresher breath, better poops, and more energy after switching to Sundays. Now, one of my best friends has a dog. I remember when he bought the dog, and let me tell you, Sundays is healthy, and he's a big fan of Sundays for Dogs. And it's convenient because unlike other fresh dog food, Sundays doesn't require refrigeration or preparation because of their air drying process. Just pour and serve. And when you start a Sunday subscription, you'll automatically get 20% off and free shipping on every reorder. You can cancel or pause your subscription anytime with our 100% satisfaction guarantee. And every order ships right to your door, so you'll never worry about running out of dog food again. It is so easy. Again, one of my best friends has a dog, and I see the dog all the time. And sometimes he just forgets to buy the food. He just like forgets it, but not with Sundays for Dogs. The new year is not only the perfect time for us humans to make healthy changes, but for your pup as well. Get 40% off a 2-week trial of Sundays. Go to sundaysfordogs.com/PSTP or use code PSTP at checkout. Hey, this is Dre, and welcome to Pod Save the People. In this episode, it's me and Miles talking about all the stuff that happened this past week. There's so much. And shout out to our two other hosts on the podcast, Diara and Kaya, who are not with us this week, but are always here in spirit. And if you do not follow us on Instagram, please go follow us at Pod Save the People right now. Here we go. Today is a special episode because it is Miles and I. It hasn't been the two of us ever in the history of the pod. I don't think it's ever been two people, but shout out to Diara and Kaya, who we love and will be returning, obviously. And we are pumped to bring back the Blackest Book Club in the coming week.
Okay, I'm excited about that. I'm so excited about the Blackest Book Club.
Whoop, whoop. But this is Deray at DRY on Twitter.
And I'm Miles E. Johnson at Foul Rapture on Instagram.
Now, Miles, a lot happened this past week. It feels like there are a million things to talk about.
It was five years.
Let's just start from the top. Did you see that Mr. Pete got confirmed as a Secretary of Defense despite the allegations of abuse? Even Mitch McConnell voted against Pete. J.D. Vance had to be the tiebreaker for him to be Secretary of Defense. That's never happened before in 100 years for the vote for Secretary of Defense to be that close. People are definitely nervous about this, as I am. And, you know, it's been interesting because when people talk about white supremacy or meritocracy, I'm like, this man's only qualification is that he's white. They're literally, he hasn't like served in a service long enough. He hasn't managed people. He has a bad record when he was in any position. And yet here we are. So I don't know if you, I wanted to know if you saw that or what that looks like.
I have, the only thing I can really produce with these moments are the deepest shallow reads. So I was telling my boyfriend didn't ever watch American Psycho. Have you seen American Psycho?
I think I did. It's old though.
It's very old, and it's like the okay. man. The it's like a satire. The man has his coiffed. He's like a caricature of a Wall Street man, but it's almost like a pulp fiction of a movie. And we were watching. Me and my partner were watching Fox News, and he said he was like, "Well, he was like those white men really be coiffed on Fox News because they'll have like the hair and the perfect suits, and they're almost like they're a caricature of Bob Hope, like drag Bob Hope, and." I connect that with what's going on because that's all that is necessary. Are you able to strictly perform whiteness? Are you able to strictly be able to perform conservatism? If you can do that, you have a place, and that is the calling card. And it's none of the other things that whiteness has created as like a symptom. So it used to be like a college degree, or you know, your grandpappy lost his leg in Vietnam. All this other stuff that made you qualified as white is no more. All you need to do is be as a white man now, and that's what this is reminding me of, and what it signals to other people, culturally too, is that we're, you know, what were people saying to Ray? We're so back. what were they so back from? Talking about blonde women and skinny people. They're like, oh, we are so back. We are no longer competing with y'all no more.
It is, you know, it's funny you say that because I forgot that Pete was a Fox News host. He came from Fox News.
There's an economy and an ecosystem there that is well run. And it makes sense how come so many people once, because I was thinking about this too, how come once people go right, they don't go back. Like the left has a lot of back and forth and in between and purple and, oh, that was a little racist, but you have a really good environmentalist stuff. Like it's a lot of that kind of stuff sometimes. But like in the right, it just feels like they, once you get to that space, there's like, we're never going to experience Amber Rose in any other way again. But this Pamela Anderson character for the right.
I want to ask, so, you know, when we talk about the performance of conservatism, what do you make of the performance of sort of what people call the far left, or sort of, I'm asking because I'm struggling with seeing people online on ostensibly on the side that I'm on, say things like, well, Trump and Kamala were the same anyway, or, you know, I know I told people not to vote for her, but I didn't think it would be this bad. Or, and I am, you know, I'm a pretty patient person and I've been an activist long enough that I've seen people sort of shift their positions, but I'm truly like, oh, the balls are below. I'm not as sympathetic in this moment, and only not because I want to apply blame, but I actually don't know what it means to organize or build community with people for whom this is their analysis. Like, I just struggle. Like, if you say things like, you know, Kamala and Trump are the same thing, I'm like, well, I don't, maybe similar on some very narrow things to that, but the same, that just feels like too far to me. That doesn't feel true. And I only bring it up because I don't know what it means to build community with people who continue to say that. But I wanted to ask you what you thought.
I think the digital sphere is so strange. So I have all the love in the world for, and all the like understanding in the world for somebody who protested their vote because of how they feel about the genocide, how they feel about the Democratic Party and all those different things. I really have a deep understanding and oftentimes agreement. Like, usually that's where I am. But the internet and social media is a place of intellectual homelessness, meaning there's a whole lot of people who didn't really find what theory fits them. You know, there's a lot of things that I was doing and saying, and, you know, a lot of us were during the Obama era in a certain type of class of thought and stuff like that. And I veered differently and I found different thinkers and I really found my intellectual home. But because on social media, everything is about likes and profit and who's going to say the thing or be the most right or get people to see them as intellectual messiah to lead them into clear waters. Everybody's chasing to say the right thing, which is often on the internet is the most left of center thing or the most far left thing, but then you don't actually have the knowledge or praxis to prepare yourself. There are people who said, we know that we were in the sense politically setting ourselves on fire by voting for Trump, and we are okay with that because we saw a literal place get set on fire or literal children get set on fire, and we're okay with that, but we will not stand with a nation who does not stand with the people of Palestine, even if it means harming us. I respect that. You don't really get that kind of, I don't know the right word for it, on the internet. You don't really know. You don't know what you're really doing. And you see a lot of people go from don't vote, they're the same, to crying. And I'm like, well, that's an emotional gap that you should have filled way before you let people know your politics. You know, I'm ready for everybody to hate me when I say certain things way before I even said it, because that's my politic. But most people are just prepared to go viral, get growth and stuff like that. We're treating our own personal, political, intellectual evolution like it's Wall Street, and each quarter we need more and more people. And that's not how intellectual or political evolution works.
I wanted to bring up too, I don't know if you saw that there's a hiring freeze. So if you got offered a job by the federal government, that job is no longer happening, and that he got rid of all the DEI people and all the executive departments and also put out a call that if you know somebody who's still working in the government who does DEI work and we miss them, then you need to email this email address and tell on them.
It's Minority Report meets like Nazi Germany. Do you have your papers? It's like both of those things at one time.
At one time. And then they reversed this. But did you see that the Air Force Academy actually said that it was removing any mention of the Tuskegee Airmen. It was taking them out of the curriculum as a part of the response to the executive order around DEI. And then as a result of backlash this morning, the Air Force said that they put it back. But I wanted to bring this here because I'm interested in your read around this attack on what Trump is calling DEI, but seems to be an attack on anything Black. And I think just today, Rutgers announced that it is no longer doing like an HBCU conference because it cannot do it given Trump's executive order around DEI.
Why can't he do it exactly?
So the Rutgers Center for Minority Serving Institutions said it was asked to cease all work it was performing under the auspices of DEI at Jobs for the Future, which is funded by the Department of Labor. The decision was directly influenced by recent actions taken by President Donald Trump in his first week, said a spokesperson for the university. And this is about his executive order with DEI.
Got it. I think the first thing is, my brain goes straight to pop culture all the time, DeRay. Something's wrong with me. Tyler Perry just came out with a film starring Kerry Washington called The 6888, which if you watch it, it's some imperialist American Black propaganda, and it's made to make you feel warmer about America and the project, and also kind of amplifying these stories that, of course, they make us feel warm and, oh my goodness, we did this and we carried the mail to the soldiers, or we did this for NASA. But it also is supposed to kind of keep Black people in love with the empire that rejects them. Even like I think about Taraji P. Henson's speech and monologue around segregation during the Hidden Figures movie, and mind you that speech never happened. Like, so they just like they invented a race story to make sure you drive home like you should be happy to be working in the empire and have these jobs because we didn't have it and stuff like that and whatever. And this reminds me about how we're actually like regarded. And I think the question that is a kind of, I guess like just underneath these like instances is how did Black people get so attached to something that hates them, you know? And I know that, and I feel like even when I see people who I respect bring it up or comment on it, and sometimes things can be a little ambiguous about, just create your own institutions, or we need to have our own stuff, and we need to have our own economic systems and schools and medicines and hospitals and stuff. But it's really like an urgent thing because these institutions are made to not like you. And it's just a return back to factory settings. It's not an advancement to a new advanced form of white supremacy. It's a return to factory settings that was always the nation's right to do. So if you found yourself interwoven, I really struggle with this. I struggle with this since Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And I was a little kid, like, not a little kid, but I was like a teenager just kind of getting my political awareness on. And I'm like, wait. So they don't want me in the army because I'm gay, but I don't want to be in the army because they racist and they don't want me be here anyway. So that's very simple.
Do Black people love it, or do you have a choice? Like, is it just sort of like you're in it and you just sort of accept that, like, this is the government, so you at least want it to not be
So I guess I just don't understand, like, what the... And I guess there is no strategy, right? I guess the strategy has always been, we're Black people. If you can get out the mud, get out your mud your way. And nobody wants... I can say kind of clearly, nobody... You know, once getting it out of the mud has created an alternative to the original stick that got you out the mud, you know? And I think we're really starting to face the brunt of it because this is not ours. And if it doesn't happen with Trump and he just, you know, excuse my language, but fucks up this next 4 years, he's already revving up Baron. They're already revving up J.D. Vance. Like, this is not going away. We have to figure out alternatives. That's where
or might, and it might be not or, that we actually did do an alternative and we call that period Reconstruction, which nobody remembers because we don't teach it. But that we did have this era of, like, Black political power building, and the response to it was so wild that white people literally just killed every Black person that participated in the power building moment.
Reconstruction was a long time ago. And I also think that because
it still happened though.
I know it still happened, but I'm like, it's either we gotta have one or two. Either everybody ain't the millionaire or as powerful or as smart as they say they are. Or, you know, we haven't done anything since Reconstruction. We haven't really made these alternatives since maybe Black Wall Street. Like, how I think about it now, specifically because so many things are digital, so many things are air, so many things aren't things you can easily burn down. I'm like, this is a high time to rethink certain things. You know, you can do things that benefit Black people without healthcare or getting Black people money or resources or whatever without necessarily building something like a church that needs to be burned down. Those brick and mortar places could just be symbolic. I think we need to revisit those things. I understand, obviously, that we've faced white terrorism, but I think you continue to reconstruct until, and just like, you know, we're both praying gay folks and God believing gay folks. And I
who's
think
who's gay?
Just me. But I think that's one of the things, like, you kind of learn in scripture through God and through your ancestors, is that you kind of get rebuilt up and you get taken down and get rebuilt up and you go higher and you get taken down and you learn your lesson and you go into, like, that is the story of the birth, the crucifixion and the resurrection. And I just don't think that just because it got destroyed one time, that we just have to continue.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting hearing you say that. It almost feels like because there was an anticipation that we would do that is one of the reasons why Elon bought Twitter. You know, I think about the protests as this, like, this sort of first moment in our generation where the internet was used to organize all these people who had not come together before. And, you know, the left was pretty powerful on things like Twitter. And then all of a sudden Elon comes and, you know, the digital space is no longer like an easy space for us to organize, you know?
Yeah. But it's just, we can't be the party who understands the complicated versions and complicated ways that, like, capitalism works. And then, and how conservatism works, and we'll be all heady. And then also be surprised when somebody says, oh, you ain't doing that shit on my app. You about to go on to that Blue Sky, and Blue Sky, they're going to be like, yo, you can't say all of that, you know. Keep it cute, you know. I think it's great to strike gold on these platforms, but I think that it should always be about how, as quickly as possible, do I bargain this power for something that's independent and something that is not reliant on the whims of these billionaires and conservatives.
I wanted to bring up too, you know, I actually like Hakeem Jeffries. He is hopefully going to be the Speaker of the House when the Dems have a majority in the House, but he is the leader of the Democrats in the House. But I will say I was disappointed in his tweet, Miles. I don't know if you had a chance to see his tweet.
The Jesus tweet?
He tweeted, presidents come and presidents go through it all. God is still on the throne. And it's like, Hakeem, Trump is trying to tear this thing up. Tweeting that God is still on the throne is not the leadership or strategy that people are looking for in this moment. That does not feel like a rallying cry. And I am team, shout out to God. I think, you know, we made it way before. You know, I'm in. But I'm team, like, God.
Not I'm in.
But I'm like, is this the plan? Because, baby, I'm seeing people spiral. I think it is not only misinformation that's happening, it's misdirection. Like, people don't even know, like, where the source of the thing is that is the problem happening. And his God is still on the throne. I was like, oh, no, this is a bad strategy.
I'm of two minds. My first mind is, it's hard for me, and maybe this is just, you know, hyper-normalization gone wild in my brain. that it's hard for me to hype critique anybody, specifically him, for a tweet, specifically something that is like nowhere near anything that I've seen from conservative politicians. It's just hard. Honestly, if I'm being like, how I read it was more trying to bring levity and keep the temperature cool and like be like, and like how I, cause I read it and I was like, yeah, Jesus is King. And I just didn't read it as like a call to action or anything. I don't know if X, cause X is X now. So I don't even know if X even has the power to be used how it was used 10 years ago as a rallying cry. So I just saw it as something as like, as being like, oh, everything's going wild and everybody's panicking. I'm actually going to bring some like levity, some Christian humor and some like black wink wink to this because maybe that will keep the temperature like calm. That's how I read it. Maybe that's just too kind of a reading. You know. Somebody got to be kind to
black people. I don't know what I expected you to say, but it was not that. So shout out to that.
Whatever they're doing for Trump and all the lies that they're talking about, what Elon was doing and that salute, I'm doing the same thing for a Negro. So what are you saying? Yeah, so I'm going to use my intellect to protect the Negroes in this case.
Are you doing that for all black people? Because I did want to bring up the one Candace Owens who inspired the latest school shooter. So I will ask you to, you know, lead us into that conversation since you said that you were here to defend.
I wasn't here to defend. I said all people on the left. And but before we even move on to that, I do also want to say that I think it's hard. I am in a place of privilege, but I'm still affected by these things. I'm not saying this of a place where nothing will touch me, but I am able to see how it's healthy that a lot of people in general see how maybe incompetent the people that they're hiring are who they're electing are. So if there are people who are seeing what he said in that way, I think it's good. I think that people have been able to afford to be too detached. And I think whatever frustration you're feeling, I think it's actually healthy to be riled up, you know?
Hey, you're listening to Pod Save the People. Stay tuned, there's more to come. Pod Save the People is brought to you by Acorns. Now, I didn't grow up getting a lot of lessons about money. I knew to save my money. I knew don't spend your whole paycheck. I knew, you know, if you go to cash check in place, it's probably not going to help you out. But I didn't get like any real advice about investing or how to use accounts to make your money go further. I've learned almost all of those things as an adult. And the cool thing is that I didn't have to learn them alone. There have been things along the way that have just given me more information and more tools, frankly, to learn how to manage my money better. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that matches you and your money goals. You don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. And I'll tell you, I came into this investing situation not knowing much about any of it. And Acorns was such an easy way to get started. It helped me use the money that I did have and develop a portfolio that worked for me, as opposed to just having my money sit in my debit account, which is what I was doing before. Sign up now and join the over 13 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $22 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/PSDP or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/PSDP.
Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is a subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends.
I read the whole manifesto, DeRay. Did you even like look at it?
I only saw the pieces online. You read the whole thing?
Yeah, so on that article that I sent from Channel 2, they have a link in the middle of the article that links to the whole manifesto, and I looked at it. It's really disturbing. I wouldn't say you have to read it, but that's where I got, he like talked about being raised by Hebrew Israelites. He doesn't really name that he has any type of connection with that theory or anything anymore, obviously, but it's interesting that it seems as though one cult was able to do a cult off, and the woman, the culting knitting lady who I talked about, says how often people do cult jump, is what it's called, and how once you are, your brain is...
You really are in on this cult. What's the cult woman stuff again?
Her name is Cult Knitting Lady.
I might need to actually watch
her. I have her book. I've been reading. Yeah, and I've been reading her books. It really has been... It has been put language to a lot of stuff that I've felt and that I've seen, but she's really been able to put language to it in a way that's really grounded and interesting. But cult jumping is a thing. So it makes sense that somebody who was a Hebrew Israelite was able to jump to Nazism despite their race. What I thought was interesting about him naming Candace Owens as his most powerful influence was here... Because we always talk about things theoretically, DeRay, and we're like, you don't need to be a white person to function in white supremacy. And I think some people, sometimes people get it, but this is just so clear. You have a black boy listening to a black woman, and this black woman is helping the radicalization of the annihilation of his own like race, or the desire to see his own race annihilated, and there need not be any white people involved. That's where we're at today of what's possible, and that is also what the internet can facilitate. There was a lot of warnings to other people who he's in community with on those sites that they're being more and more watched all the time and giving them pointers of how to do it. So, I just, that is the portion that really just stuck out to me, that this is something that is still a white supremacist, white terror, domestic terror moment, if you read that, but there are white supremacist ideologues with black bodies amongst us, you know?
He wrote, Candace Owens influenced me above all each time she spoke. I think she responded by saying that the manifesto wasn't real. What do you make of her response?
I haven't seen anything that Candace... Luckily, I haven't seen
anything. I wish y'all could have seen Miles lean forward like somebody's old grandpa. Just like excuse me?
Yeah, no, it's either one or two things just because we're live. So, of course, if that from... that new source isn't real, then, you know, it's not real. And if there's enough proof of it not being real, then, you know, whatever. And everything I said still holds, because at the end of the day, it was a black boy who was radicalizing white supremacy from the internet.
I don't think that it wasn't real. I just think that her response was
to No, I'm going to follow up. So I just wanted to I was bad. I was kind of backing myself up because I don't know what's going to happen in the next 7 days. But I think that it is real. And I think that Candace Owens is full of you know what. And I think that she... You know, I was watching her, and she was during the inauguration, and she was like going like, America, like just like this, like just had her hands in the air going, America, we're so back and we're so back. And I looked at her and I said, this is a performance artist. I was like, she's just playing the game because this is where the money's at, and she doesn't care, and she's saying the things, and when you listen to what she's saying, you can hear her trying to The only reason she fell into pro-Palestinian rhetoric is because pro-Palestinian rhetoric happened to align with her anti-Semitic rhetoric that she likes to dog whistle inside of everything that she says, because the reason why she gets paid is because there are white supremacists who listen to her and who feed onto her, and she says those things and pushes certain types of politics in a very covert way that she could just rap as just arguments or just free thinking. If I was playing the clown show that she was doing, I would want to distance myself from the real harm too. What do you think?
Yeah, I was, you know, honestly, this is one of the first Black school shooters we've seen. So I was shocked by that in general. I was shocked by the portions of the manifesto I read. And, you know, I was talking to one of my friends about Candace. Is that Candace is, you know, we do not agree, but Candace does give you actual arguments. They're wrong. They're not, like, informed by the right things. They lead you to the wrong place. But unlike some of the people on the right and the left who just tell you to believe a thing, she manufactures reasons. And I get that that convinces people of this. So, like, I wasn't confused by him being like, she convinced me of, like, above all. But it goes back to your point about the cult. It's like, this is a death cult. Like, I think we will soon continue to see the consequences. Even with the January 6th people being pardoned, it's like, what message does it send that these people literally, I will never forget, Miles, that man putting his feet up on Nancy Pelosi's desk. I will remember that until the cows or those people climbing the Capitol wall. The fact that they all just got released is, and you trying to tell me that the boy that stole from the corner store should be locked up? Oh no, this is a joke.
I just mourn the power, like just the erosion of political influence, because how do you tell somebody to fight for this, to vote for that, to do these different things. And there are people who want to see certain things happen strictly because of the message, you know? It's really not about, like, what message it sends. It's just a clear message. It's Trump doesn't do nothing with a question mark. It's all a period. So it's terrifying to say what message it sends, but we know what he's saying. You know, it's almost like whatever in Harry Potter where you can't say the person's name. It's like, we don't want to say it, but it's like, no, he is saying that if you are interested in any type of white terror, I got your back. If you're interested in any type of political white domestic terror, I got your back. And if you know who to direct it towards, because you know who my people are, I got your back. That's what he is saying. And that is scary, because everybody, I don't care if you live in Harlem, I don't care if you live in Kentucky, you are a neighbor away from somebody who is a couple of YouTube videos away from not being all the way there in the head anymore. And I think that is the thing, is specifically, you know, when you see that map, the voting map, and you see all that red.
Yeah, you're like,
and you're like, oh, we surrounded. Oh, we, doesn't it feel like zombie time? Like, you're like, oh shit, like lock everything up. That's what this feels like. And then him releasing those people feels like this too. Feels like, oh, they're amongst us.
Hey, you're listening to Pod Save the People. Stay tuned, there's more to come. This podcast is sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Whether you're just starting out or managing a growing brand, Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your own terms. Now, I'll tell you, in the protests when we first began, I needed to make some websites. I didn't know what I was doing, and if not for Squarespace, I would have never put anything on the internet. Squarespace was the tool that I used to probably make the first 8 sites that we ever made because of the protests. So I am a Squarespace evangelist. And now they're introducing design intelligence from Squarespace. They're combining 2 decades of industry-leading design expertise with cutting-edge AI technology so you can unlock the strongest creative potential there is. And design intelligence allows anybody to build a beautiful, more personalized website tailored to your needs and to create a bespoke digital identity that you can use across all of your online presence. And Squarespace Payments is the easiest way to manage your payments in one place with Squarespace. Onboarding is fast and simple, and you can get started in just a few clicks and start receiving payments right away. Plus, give your customers more ways to pay with popular methods like Klarna, Direct Debit, Apple Pay, Afterpay, and ClearPay. And you can connect all the major social media accounts and multimedia accounts to your website in a few clicks, icons, direct links, embedded feeds. And it's so easy to update content where you need it, which helps build visitor trust in the work you're doing. Sellers can also sync their product catalog directly with Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and Google to reach more customers and reduce the steps for the purchase. You can head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/PSTP to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/PSTP.
Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends.
Going back to the performance, actually, the same thing with ICE. So ICE now has quotas. They have to arrest a certain number of people a day. And I don't know if you also saw that they had been instructed to dress for the cameras.
Didn't I say that? I didn't. Can you tell me more about the instruction? Because I didn't see that part about the attire.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So the instruction was, a source said that they have just literally been instructed to, like, dress nicely so that when they do the arrest, it looks orderly, like that the ICE officers look good. Mm-hmm. And that is, like, part of the strategy that the Trump administration is employing. Even, I don't know if you saw the press secretary, the new press secretary tweeted a picture of people being deported. And people, and he's like, you know, we started the deportations. And they were like, that was scheduled before Trump. But he's like, he is using this imagery around ICE and deportations.
If we were in a fairer world, I would, like, just pray that he just do some AI and just have, and I was like, his supporters will believe the same thing. like you don't actually.
Why do you think people want to see it? Like, what do you think is so interesting about people wanting to see, like, why he leans into the performance and lies about it being a landslide win? And what should the left's response be?
That's a really deep question, DeRay. Like, cause that's a question that I always write about. That's what I really want to know. We're in a country where the foundation of our entertainment is freak shows, minstrelsy, lynching postcards. There is something baked into our entertainment culture and how we consume things, that we enjoy watching terror, that we enjoy watching the brutalization of others, and we love anything that extracts us from it and be able to observe it. That is just something that is baked into American culture. You have to ask somebody who's smarter than me, like, the why, but I do think it's there. You know, I think if we're trying to figure out why in 2025 this is happening right now, we'll always come up short because it's just too shallow. The legacy of this is very long. I might just not have been gone deep enough in my own kind of internal shadow to really be able to see why people love seeing the brutality, but they do. But what I will say about this too is the boy who just did the domestic terrorism at the school is just one example of somebody kind of doing something that is not at the benefit of their own race and their own culture. I think with these immigration policies and what's happening right now, what to me feels the most disturbing is that I know a lot of people who are immigrants or the same race of these people are enjoying it. That is what's the most disturbing thing to me. I can do white versus black. And white people are doing something horrible and brown people are looking in astonishment. Black people are, something's happening to black people, and white people are responsible. Like, all of that kind of makes sense. What we're at now, because we've been able to so remove white terror from race, is you see a lot of brown people, legal immigrants, people who thought, oh, I'm not a criminal, illegal immigrant, cheering on the humiliation and the brutalization and the inhumane treatment of people who are of their same race and of their same heritage. That's what's so interesting about that. In real time, we're watching people extract them to fall into whiteness, extracting and removing themselves from their identity in order to be with power. And it's something that you talk about theoretically, but here you are seeing it like it's like in a freaking comic book. That to me is what's most interesting.
Let's turn the topics, and can you take us to two culture moments of the week, Tabitha Target and DJ Academics?
Y'all, it's been a week. It's been years in this week. So Tabitha, who I love, I'm gazing at Tabitha's seasoning as I'm speaking right now. I've supported everything Tabitha. But essentially, Tabitha got online once Target had announced their DEI rollbacks. Tabitha got online and she told black people, and I want to say that she meant well, but she told black people, hey, when you're boycotting, do what you got to do. But also, let's be reminded that next month is February, and there's a lot of black businesses who are going to be involved in Target for February. So when you are boycotting Target, also remember that these are also, there's black business owners who you're going to be affecting when you do those things. Horrible timing, right?
Really bad timing. The Twitter is tearing Tabitha.
And sometimes, and you know, I hate how the social media works because it just doesn't work. But I do miss the days that you can have a conversation with somebody and they're close enough to your side, which I feel like Tabitha obviously is, that yes, you can just get them more to the left or a little bit more radical or just kind of expand their imagination a little bit more or be able to brunt certain sacrifices. Because the real story is, Tabitha, you aligned yourself with a corporate monster like Target, and part of integrating yourself with a corporate monster like Target is, A, you don't have the agency that you want, but then also, if we gotta do something as black people, you gotta be like, you know, do what y'all gotta do, and you know, I put this money in a high yield savings account in some stocks, and I was already prepared for the day if, because I was just doing this until y'all were ready, or I'm just doing this until we had the call. I think that I thought that all black people kind of had that same thing where, like, okay, DeRay tell me to hit the streets, I'm hitting the streets. But until then, I'm gonna get my paycheck. And it just seems as though that hasn't been the agreement. And maybe us not discussing that being the agreement has facilitated a lot of ignorance. What was your take on it?
So I actually didn't see the original thing. I just saw people talking really critically about Tabitha. And the internet has generally liked her, even if they're like, sort of annoyed at her being an auntie. It's sort of the annoyance that you have with your auntie where you're like, I get it. That's my girl. It's just auntie. Mm. But people are really pissed about this. And I did think it was like really, really, it was bad timing on Target's part. Cause you're like, Black History Month is coming up. They pulled out of the Pride Parade and you know, they're from Minnesota. They pulled out of the Pride Parade in Minneapolis. They're one of the biggest employers in the region. I used to live in Minneapolis. So like, I'm shocked at how quickly this happened with places like Target, especially cause black people ride for Target, you know? So I'm like, oh, we expected better from you on this one. You know, people defending Tabitha have been like, well, she isn't necessarily that rich and did it. And I'm like, these are the wrong arguments, y'all. This is not the moment. And, you know, in a moment of solidarity where we need to figure out what power looks like, I also think that this moment highlights that there's a real leadership gap in our community on our side, that people are looking for like, a message or like a strategy. And in the absence of there being any strategy to latch on, I think we get moments where one strategy comes up, like the boycott Target, and it becomes the only thing that's in the room because nobody's doing anything else. And I don't know if you saw Sharpton do the buy-in at Costco. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
So, like, you know, that's interesting because Costco did not get rid of its DEI thing. But then people criticize him because apparently the employees at Costco are striking. So they were like, not the right moment to do that. But I do think this highlights like a leadership issue. And I was really shocked at Tabitha. I don't know if she said something since. But I think, you know, I'm interested to see what Aurora says. You know, Aurora and the 15, you know, I know I'm friends with Aurora, but the 15% pledge.
No.
So it came right after 2020. Aurora's in fashion and in the beauty space, but she got all these companies to devote space to Black owned businesses and companies. Huge deal, like big thing.
No, I know. I do know about that. Yes. Oh no, we had dinner with Aurora before.
A while ago.
Yeah. But no, I remember like knowing. Yes, I know exactly. Yes.
And like, what do you do when, you know, it was these initiatives that supported her and able to bring all these products to places like Target. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you roll them back and it's like, ooh.
Kind of. I think that we are in a weird sticky web when all of our protests and political power seems to be the most energized when it's around consumerism and what you should buy and not buy and not get. It just kind of feels like, oh, we're going to not buy here. Hey, everybody, go to Costco and da da da. And I'm like, you need to be learning how to grow your own food. I'm like, because Costco can be telling you they ain't doing DEI, but they got the technology to say all these Black people, their apples are $10. Not to, you know, we're at a stage right now where the performance can be the best performance of liberation ever, and the actual system can be destroying not just their workers but their consumers too. So we really have to detach from consumption. That's the thing with the apps too. You jumping from one app to another app to the other app, and the problem is the damn phone. We can't get around that. So that's the thing too. And with this Tabitha situation too, it really bathed the whole situation in the Black community with Windex around the class part. You know, there is just this deep seated resentment that. I haven't felt it for anybody else. I felt it towards me because I'm usually seen as somebody who, you know, I'm articulate, I dress well, everything's going well, you know, things are great. I'm in a privileged place in my life. But even when I'm not, it still appears that I am. And I can feel the resentment from other Black people to other Black people. I've seen it. Even how we interact in clubs and in parties, how we kind of dress to observe and to compete. Like, I've just seen a different shift in how we do things, and we do things how we consume things, and we consume things like Amazon and Tinder. So we're all just kind of there showing ourselves as the best product possible to be judged and to be liked. And I don't know. There's just something there that just has made this that. The air in Black culture is so strange, and it's not just Drake. It's other things too. And I think this Tabitha situation made it clear that there's this last thing that I'll say that I wanted to say to you. And it's just speculative, but I think we're gonna see individualized class revolts. I think we're gonna see in individual people's communities, be you Black, be you gay, be you brown, whatever. I think we're gonna see moments and instances of people who are seen as have-nots in those communities do something to the people that haves. I think we're gonna start seeing internalized things. So I think that the whole thing with the healthcare CEO and Luigi is like a macro, but I think we're gonna see micro things in other people's communities. And this Tabitha conversation has just kind of gave me the courage to articulate that because I felt it for a long time. But, you know, I try to be responsible for what I speculate.
Especially when the gap is so big. You get CEOs making $600,000 and employees making $50,000. And you're like...
But that's not even the big gap, DeRay. That gap is big, right? I'm not trying to say it's not big. But to me, the big gap is somebody who is making $25,000, $30,000, living next to somebody who's making $100,000, $150,000. Those type of gaps in communities cause a lot of tension, and because the housing's horrible, so those people are not living on top of you, because now we're in this hyper-surveillance society, so you can go on Twitter and see how somebody's living, and you can see how your neighbor's doing in the vacation and stuff like that. I think those are the gaps that that are going to be actionable, in my opinion.
Don't go anywhere. More Pod Save the People's coming. Pod Save the People is brought to you by Mosh. Now, the older I get and the more focused I get in the gym, the more intentional I am about the foods that I put in my body, what I drink, how often I eat, all this stuff. I just got to like be more intentional in a way that I didn't think about. I'm about to turn 40 and I want to make sure that I get at least another 40 more years in. And part of that is not only the meals that I eat, but it is about the snacks that I eat. And I've been big on protein snacks, but let me tell you, some are not great and some don't taste good. But then some are amazing, like Mosh Bars. Big, big fan of Mosh Bars. And you might have heard of them on Shark Tank. They were founded by Maria Shriver and her son, Patrick Schwarzenegger, with the simple mission to create a conversation about brain health through food education and research. Now, Maria's father suffered from Alzheimer's, and since then, she and Patrick have dedicated themselves to finding ways to help other families dealing with this disease. Mosh joined forces with the world's top scientists and functional nutritionists to go beyond your average protein bar. Now, they have 8 delicious flavors, including a plant-based one and peanut butter and chocolate, and each Mosh bar is made with ingredients that support brain health, like ashwagandha, lion's mane, collagen, and omega-3s. It is amazing. And now Mosh Bars come with a new look and new formulation featuring a game-changing, brain-boosting ingredient you won't find in any other bar. Mosh is now the first and only food brand boosted with Cognizin, a premium nootropic that supplies the brain with a patented form of citrulline. But here's the best part to make you feel good. Mosh donates a portion of all proceeds from your order to fund gender-based brain health research through the Women's Alzheimer's Movement. Now, why gender-based? Because 2/3 of all Alzheimer's patients are women. Mosh is working closely to close the gap between women and men's health research. Now, I eat a lot of protein in a given day. I'm trying to get to my body weight in protein every day. I can normally get to 80% of it, which is just as good. And it means that I'm trying to be innovative because I obviously won't get all of it in the meal that I eat. So I've tested a lot of protein bars because some taste like chalk and then some taste amazing. Mosh is one of the ones that tastes amazing. I'm the biggest fan of the cookie dough crunch. That is my all-time fave of the Mosh Bars. And I also like the lemon white chocolate crunch. Those are my two faves, but I really do think that the cookie dough crunch is top tier. Now, if you want to find ways to give back to others and fuel your body and brain, Mosh Bars are the perfect choice for you. Head to moshlife.com/PTSB to save 20% off plus free shipping on the bestsellers trial pack. That's 20% off plus free shipping on the bestsellers trial pack at moshlife.com/PTSB. Thank you, Mosh, for sponsoring this episode.
Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends.
Mighty Years, Miles, it sort of actually talks about a lot of the things that we talked about, but I didn't know that Kroger, there's a long story in The Nation. It's a great story. It's in the sense that it's really well written. But I had no clue that they have facial recognition technology in grocery stores now that Kroger is piloting that changes the price of the items depending on who the face is. That is so wild to me. When I read it, I was like, this can't be real. And then I was like, oh, this is the way that we will sort of crystallize disparity at every level is actually shocking to me. That there's a part of the surveillance state that I'm like, okay, it's just happening. It is what it is. Not great. But I'm like, the idea that the prices change by who walks up to the item is just so dystopian to me that I wanted to bring it to the pod.
No, that article was so good. Had me from top to bottom. I'm always very honest about if something was a little bit, you know, it doesn't necessarily deserve a Netflix special, but I need to know it. This one informs me and was riveting. The first thing I thought about was RFK Jr. Listen, I don't know everything about RFK Jr. I really don't. I probably should have even before I said this, seen if he has any kind of like crazy allegations, like sexual allegations at the time of me saying this. I don't know about anything around that. But what I was thinking about is how he was trying to infiltrate the Democratic Party, you know? And I think how we dismiss people with influence and power has to change, because he was such a ridiculous figure that you're like, no. And then he ends up like amassing, but he had so much power and influence around Make America Healthy Again and around the food industry. And he's just been able to give all that power and influence to the Republicans and give it to them. And I think that, Sunny Halston, who I love, and the only reason I know I'm saying her name is because I love her and I watch her all the time on The View, but like, seeing her every single time insult him and say he had an earworm and da 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 da. And, you know, most Americans have dealt with something that's a little embarrassing. Most Americans have known somebody who's a felon. Like, these kind of classed insults don't work, and they're making us leak power because it's making it feel like only a select few, elite few, get to be a part of the Democratic Party, and that's not how popular votes are won. You know? That's what this made me think of. Let me connect it, because I felt like I said this two or three times already. But the reason why it made me think of that is because I remember seeing during my own health journey and just diet journey, different people saying different things around, oh, if this company finds out you're on food stamps, your groceries will already be higher, or this company's price gouging this neighborhood and stuff like that. And it was all dismissed as, depending on what part of the internet you were on, it was dismissed as far right conspiracy theories about, you know, anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, or it was far leftist political conspiracy theories. But either which way, now we're seeing that, in fact, those technologies are here, are happening, and are going to be affecting people. And yeah, I just think that these are the kind of stories that we can use to create power, but we can't be so elitist about who holds that power and influence, in my opinion. So those are my thoughts.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what people in communities think about this when they learn about it. But you're
if they learn about it.
If they learn about it, right. Your news to close us out.
Yes. So I wanted to bring some good news to the podcast. And right now I am obsessed with Florence Price. She's a pioneer. She was a pioneering African American composer. And what makes her music so interesting is that she combines classical music, and she also combined African spirituals and blues with that classical music. If you look up Florence Price, you'll see that in the last few years, a lot of composers have began to create her work and record it and reimagine it. So it's just a good thing to delve into. But I'm always interested, because I'm just I just kind of made it my thing this year, is that wherever a Black person who's creative has gone, I want to know about that space too. Even if it's metal, even if it's classical, which are my kind of like, I don't care about those things, or opera. And, you know, Leontine Price, for opera, and Florence Price, no relation, by the way, for classical composition. It's so interesting. It's so relaxing. And I think we just need to know that Black people have been reimagining things and using tools to reimagine. Just on closeout to be a little lunar and be a little bit maybe even pessimistic, though, too. I think I'm also fascinated with Florence Price because I see her as like a musical prophecy, like the extent of that stuff. So she integrates the African and the spiritual and the blues into classical music. But what's interesting is when I listen to it, it's still classical music. And it kind of makes me think about Audre Lorde and the Master Tools that, yeah, you can use all these radical or Black tools and stuff like that, but at the end of the day, it's still the master's house. It kind of scratched my brain there too. Did you get to listen to her? I've been begging you to listen to her.
I did not listen, but I did read up on her. And okay. What I found is a really good, there's a really good essay called The Women Who Made Florence Price. And it's a book called Southside Impresarios, How Race Women Transformed Chicago's Classical Music Scene. And the long and short of it is that there was a group of elite Black women who poured into women like Florence to create space for them, to create training, to create access, to make sure that they had the resources to compete on the stage with the most resourced white women, which is how you get a Florence Price performing. And there's another Black woman, actually, 20-year-old Margaret Bonds, who became a well-known composer in her own right, but she performed as the evening soloist alongside Florence Price, who is famous for being the first Black woman who had a symphony performed at a major American orchestra, which was the 1933 Chicago Symphony Concert. But it was cool to see the history. There's a whole book about the history of this group of Black women who created space for Black art in Chicago, and they did it as a strategy. It was not haphazard. And what the author does is try and retell that story so it's not lost, so that Florence Price doesn't become a lightning in a bottle. She becomes a part of a lineage of Black organizing that was intentional.
Well, that's it. Thanks so much for tuning in to Bossy and the People this week. Don't forget to follow us at Cricket Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And if you enjoyed this episode of Bossy and the People, consider dropping us a review on your favorite podcast app. And we'll see you next week. Bossy and the People is a production of Cricket Media. It's produced by AJ Moultrie and mixed by Vasilis Futopoulos. Executive produced by me, and special thanks to our weekly contributors, Kai Henderson, DR Ballinger, and Miles E. Johnson.
Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
Hi, I'm Alex Wagner. I do not need to tell you that being an American right now is a wild ride. But as a longtime journalist, I am not interested in the noise or the fear-mongering. I'm interested in the stories at the heart of the headlines. That is why every week on my show, Runaway Country, I'm joined by folks in the middle of the crossfire. From disillusioned MAHA moms to newly fired immigration judges to Epstein victims themselves, to understand what it means to live through this political chaos as an actual human being. And now I'm excited to tell you that Runaway Country is available ad-free to Friends of the Pod subscribers. Friends of the Pod is the subscription that supports the work Crooked does as an independent media company and gives you a ton of great bonus and ad-free content. With the midterms approaching, you are going to need more content to keep you sane. And now you can find Runaway Country right there. Subscribe now at crooked.com/friends.